This is the voice of the Trumpet Magazine. News, economy, politics, trends, discovery, health, family, the Bible, the future. This is Trumpet Hour.
Hello and welcome. I appreciate you tuning in today. I'm Joel Hilliker. Celtic Throne, the Irish dance production, sponsored by the same work that sponsors this radio station, just finished up two performances in Rapid City, South Dakota, and we're preparing to stage two more performances back here in Edmond, Oklahoma. The first is tomorrow night, Thursday, October 15th at 7:30 p.m. The second is this Sunday, October 18th at 2 in the afternoon, both at Armstrong Auditorium on our headquarters campus here. This is a top-notch show. It's gotten rave reviews. If you haven't seen anything about it, please go to CelticThrone.com and watch the trailer and consider coming to one of these live performances if you're in the Edmond area over the next several days. The dance troupe has over 30 dancers, and what makes them unique is the fact that they're school age all the way down to 5 years old. I've had the opportunity to be involved in the show, not just because my whole family is participating. All three of my children are in the dance troupe. My wife is backstage helping. But we have a handful of live musicians on stage. I play baran and mandolin and sing for some of the musical numbers. It's been an exhilarating experience. When we held our world premiere back in June, I put together a few segments for this radio program interviewing the people involved in the show. And for the program today, I want to replay those interviews. The first was a discussion with the directors and two of the choreographers of the show. Next was a conversation with several of the 30-plus dancers in the show who range in age from one who just graduated college all the way down to 4 or 5 years old. And finally, I spoke with the Grammy-nominated composer of the original music for the show, Brian Byrne. I hope you'll enjoy this program, and please watch Celtic Throne. We'll start with my interview from this past June 10th with five of the people behind the production, directors Brad McDonald and Amy Fleury, assistant director Paris Turgeon, and choreographers Alexa Turgeon and Vienna Fleury. So hello, everyone. It's great to have you all here.
Hello.
Hi.
So this is crunch time, and I have to say I'm really excited to see how all of this comes together over these next couple of weeks. First of all, how are you guys all feeling at this point?
Excited.
Yeah, and it's nervous. Exhilarating. It's tiring and stressful, but also super exhilarating.
Cool. So I wanted to start by talking about the, maybe I can just direct this at Paris. You've been involved in the dance program kind of from the very beginning. We have a videotape of you as a cute little girl doing your first step two threes. So could you tell us a little bit about how this came about? This is a very ambitious plan here. Where did the idea originate and how did it develop?
Yeah, so I think the origin point for all of this kind of came about a year and a half ago. A year and a half ago around the conference, we did a pretty big recital for the ministry that was in town, and we decided to go ahead and try to perform the original choreography from Riverdance, and then we also did a hard shoe a cappella number, which I feel like those were kind of the two big standout numbers that left everyone just really amazed that we were able to do something of that caliber with our young people, because that's one of the focal points of the show is just how young our troupe is, and it's right. One thing that really sets us apart. So yeah, a year and a half ago we did this recital, essentially. It was just a recital, and these couple numbers just really blew people away, and it was my uncle's idea, Mr. Stephen Fleury, who said that, you know, I think we should do a full show, I think we should go on the road, I think we should tour. And that was kind of the brainchild for this whole production. And then from there, it's kind of just evolved, I guess. We ended up obviously getting that approved by Mr. Gerald Fleury, and he was definitely gung-ho. He loves Irish dancing. So he was definitely very supportive of that idea and has been very keen in basically helping us, you know, get the resources and the backing that we need to move forward with this project.
Mm-hmm.
He's our biggest fan.
He really
well,
is.
He's an idea guy, and he's also a good kind of engine of energy for this type of thing as well. So let's talk about the music, because that was a huge component in milestone in this coming together. You, Paris, you were also the one who kind of put the feelers out to see if we might be able to find a composer for this production.
Yeah, that's right. That was also Uncle Steven's, you know, his push there. I think that was one of the first things that we did to kind of start moving forward. And he just told me, put some feelers out for some musicians. And we were looking at, you know, more just competition musicians. So basically when you go to a dance competition, there's these musicians that sit on the side. They play the accordion, keyboard, you know, violin. And we were thinking, you know, maybe we could even just hire one of them to write some music for us, maybe have some electronic, like, synthesization also layered in there to kind of give us a fuller sound. But we were thinking of utilizing someone along that level. But in addition to those people, I think I emailed about three or four of them. In addition to them, I also emailed, like, Ronan Hardiman, who was the composer for Lord of the Dance, and then Brian Byrne, who did Heartbeat of Home, and then I think I even actually did Bill Whelan, who did River Dance, which was quite a ambitious, you know, one to try to get. I did not hear back from any of them except for Brian Byrne. He responded, and he was, you know, basically just said, your timing is great. This would be an awesome time for me to work on this. He's like, I have kind of a lull in between projects, and so basically if you can give me what you want me to start working on, I'll get going on it immediately. So, and I think it started off by just having, you know, the opening number and the finale number. But then when we heard the opening number, you know, I think then it was like, we need to try to get this guy to write everything, because we were so moved by what he had created with the opening number. So then, yeah, that's basically how we got Brian, and we have this amazing soundtrack for this production.
Yeah, what do you guys think of the music? You've been listening to it a lot lately.
It's fantastic.
We love it. Love it. We love it the more we listen to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I get tired or stressed, I just turn the music on, and it gets me going again.
I actually listened to it as I was falling asleep last night, so.
And we played it for Mr. Fleury one Sabbath morning when he came over, and he just lit up. He just said, this is fantastic.
There's nothing like it in this world. You know, we have some songs. There's a song called Pioneers where the setting is in early America. So we have, there's banjos in there. There's these quintessentially American instruments playing Irish dance music. You just don't find that sound anywhere else except for this show. And there's three or four pieces like that. You know, there's a song, Empire. I won't give away all of the details, but there's just these, well, I think there's green sleeves, or he's just weaved these melodies into an Irish dance song in a really, really special way.
Yeah. So the title of the show, Celtic Throne, and the quip or the subtitle is The Royal Journey of Irish Dance. Mr. McDonald, what does that mean? Maybe you could just tell us what the show is about.
Sure. So the show essentially follows a group of people, a nation, if you like, that migrate from Jerusalem, from the Middle East, through to Ireland, through to Scotland, through to England, through to the United States. So the show begins with one man on stage, one king, if you like, of the people, and then the end of the first piece ends with all of the dancers on stage, and the audience is introduced to the whole troupe. This is the nation of people. On stage, we have a throne, which is really just a representation of this nation. And then from there, it just progresses. It begins in Jerusalem, Origins, and then the next piece is Farewell. This is the journey across the ocean. Then the next piece is Festival, and this is a dance performed maybe on the Hill of Tara in Ireland. A fesh in Ireland. Then after that,
that's where Irish dance,
right,
the origins are, and there's actually some evidence that those origins do go back to King David and the Middle East.
Right. It? Yeah. All of these dances here, we all attend feshes every Sunday, and that term is the longer term, I think, is feshiana. And if you study Irish history, that's really, it's referring to a Feast of Tabernacles like experience, an 8-day festival. So in our minds, when festival is being performed, the vision we have is this is like a family day at the Feast of Tabernacles. Mm. And it's just this really festive, fun, big, mm-hmm. happy piece. And then from there it goes to Scotland, and then the throne or the nation of people, they move to England. And then there's Gael, which is a more tumultuous and violent song. And then second half, it opens with Pioneers. And the nation now is in America. And it remains.
That is a whole lot of fun, Pioneers.
Oh, yeah. It's a big hoedown.
Yeah. It's a hoedown, an Irish dance hoedown. It's kind of going back and forth between Irish dance and, like, other American folk dancing.
Right.
That type of thing.
Yep.
Super, super cool.
Well, we're in America for two or three pieces. We have a really fun vocal medley in the middle of the second half where Mark Jenkins and Mr. Malone come out. They play the piano and they perform all of these famous patriotic tunes. Everyone in the audience is just going to recognize what they're singing and playing. It's just going to be a lot of fun. And then we have a song called Conflict where the nation runs into some trouble. It's war, it's downfall, there's some violence. And then the show ends in a new world. The nation moves from America into a bright new utopian future. And the title of the final track is Utopia.
Mm-hmm. So you've never done anything quite on a scale like this, Amy. This is kind of uncharted territory in some ways.
That's right.
Maybe you could just give us an idea of the scope of taking on a project like this, some of the details and the dimensions that you've had to wrap your head around to make it all come together.
Well, I think one of the biggest challenges was we wanted big numbers. Mr. Fleury always brings up the fact that it's so much better when you have the numbers, the big numbers that mm-hmm. fill the stage.
Yeah.
Especially in hard shoe, he loves those big number hard shoe.
That's the quintessential
pieces.
River dance kind of a thing.
Exactly.
You got the big line with the hard shoe.
And we've always struggled to get those numbers. So when we saw when we had the performance for the ministerial conference and we had a few out of town dancers join in, and they learned their parts as best they could ahead of time, and then they came a couple days ahead of time and then participated in the practices, and it worked. And that just got us super excited because, well, could this work for, a bigger production? Mm-hmm. And then could this allow us to finally get the numbers that Mr. Fleury always wants? So we just went for it, and we just hoped and prayed that God would help us out, because we knew that it would add more of a challenge, and it definitely has. But every step of the way, we've all just felt like, well, that challenge is worth it because God's going to bless it. He'll make it work.
So, what are the numbers? I think, doesn't the program say it's 37 dancers or it's a lot of dancers altogether?
It might be 37 or 32. When you include, our youngest dancer is 4.
Yeah.
We have, 4 or 5 kids who are between 4 and 5 and 6, and then another 5 or 6 children who are between maybe 6 and 9 or 10. And they're not even our main troupe. And then we've got the main troupe, which is 16 to 20, 22, when you include the people coming in from Canada and Northeast America and Northwest America.
I have to say, those ones who are coming in from out of town are going to be so excited.
Oh, I know.
They're going to be dropped right into the middle of this amazing production.
We're so excited for them.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then you've also got the music we talked about, but there are live musicians on stage that are adding to it. You mentioned Ryan Malone, and Paula Malone is going to be singing. Vienna, you're actually singing for a couple of the numbers. And so there's the live musicians aspect. There's the sets on the stage and the lighting and all those types
costumes,
of things. Costumes.
The musical
huge
break. I mean, it's a vehicle that has 7 or 8 different parts, and every part is really important. And they all interact. For me, that's one of the biggest challenges, is there's just all these different dimensions and they've all got to interact perfectly. In a lot of cases, they've got to interact literally at exactly the same second.
Right.
So having everything, work at that level of detail is pretty challenging.
Yeah. Now, we were talking about those. There's a small handful of people who aren't even involved yet to this point. They'll be coming in within the next few days or so.
Right.
But we did have dancers on two different continents, because you've got your crew over in England and then you've got your crew here in Edmond. How do you pull this off where you're actually coordinating choreography for dancers that aren't even on the same continent?
We had one thing where it was a little program we used online, and we would have little people on there that we could move around, and that would help people see where they were in their spots. We'd also take, I guess, tutorials where we'd have the whole group dance them, and then we just basically tell them where their gap was, and then or have somebody sub in for them, and then they would be able to watch that person as they went through the dance. And yeah, a lot of videos, sometimes just Vienna or I dancing, just so they get the footwork right.
Imagination. For Vienna and Alexa, they you know, they're choreographing a song that has 16. They'd only have 10 in class,
right?
And they just have to imagine the six gaps and try figure out how is this going to look.
Yeah,
it must have been so difficult.
Well, yeah. you're talking about this some kind of a program where you're moving little people around on the screen, because I mean some of the formations are incredibly complex. There's so much happening with, I mean, I was thinking about what I was at the back of the stage watching Pioneers, and there's circles within circles and spinning in opposite directions and all of this type of thing. How do you even, how do you make something like, is that, was that the program that helped you to design some of that complexity?
Sometimes it's the program. Sometimes you just have a ton of pieces of paper with little X's over it. Sometimes I would use big X's for the bigger kids and then little ones to see where the little people were. And yeah, just playing around with that, you might have like 20 different pictures in a notebook or else 40 different slides for a number on that program.
Alexa has a very good mind for that.
Yeah, I would guess.
She's very mathematical, and she comes up with formations.
Now, Irish dance is a very highly structured, and I'd say it kind of like there's a lot of strictures that are put on it. The arms have to be behind the back, and that type of thing. When you're doing like competition Irish dance. Maybe you could just talk a bit about the way that you've gone about choreographing this, because another thing that I noticed in watching each of these dances is they're all very unique. The music is kind of sets the tone, but there's kind of a whole movement vocabulary that's unique to each of these pieces. Maybe you could just talk about what went into designing each song to be special.
Well, I think, like for me, I think Alexa was probably the same. But when we think about choreographing things, we all tend to do the feet first, and then at least I tend to do, once the footwork's done, then I'll incorporate like more arm movements. But the arm movements don't come as naturally as like the feet, the footwork does. So doing that has been hard. Like even I was working on some arms yesterday, and you think you know the footwork, and then you try to insert the arms with it, and all of a sudden your brain is, there's too much going on, so you're just, you have to practice both separately and then just try and do it over and over and over again, slowly incorporating the arms with the feet.
Well, Amy, you have a lyrical dance background, and we actually have one dancer, Hannah Worrell, in the production who is a lyrical dancer with a strong ballet background, and she kind of adds a whole other dimension to it. Maybe you could talk about that a little bit.
Yes. Well, we knew that it would be nice to have another layer like that. It was overwhelming to try to think about dealing with more people. So we didn't at the start, because it was just enough on our plates dealing with our own Irish dancers. But then we really found that there were a few gaps in the, when we listened to the music, we couldn't Irish dance to that part of the music. A lot of the introductions, for example. But it still required movement. You didn't want to just look at a blank stage for a minute. So then you just kind of needed somebody who could lyrical dance, that could, you know, kind of dance in and out of the beats. And Hannah, we knew that she had some skill, but we didn't know a whole lot about it. So we just asked her and just said, "Hey, can you just show us so show us what you got. And and she was just had a great attitude, super positive. She just gave it her all, and she looks great.
She's awesome in the show. Yeah, the part she plays, I love.
What numbers, or say, as you're watching these things coming together, you're seeing this choreography, you're seeing things meshing for the first time. What are you finding yourself super excited about?
Well, the fact that we just see God's hand in it. Oh, God put that together. Oh, yep, he was thinking about that way before we were. Just lots of things like that.
I think going back to what you were asking about with the general outline of the show and the choreography, I think one of the things that Mr. McDonald stressed really early on was making each number unique and not having it just look like another Irish dance number, another Irish dance number. And I mean, ultimately what we do is Irish dance. We don't have backgrounds in anything else. Hannah is the only one that has any other background, at least to my knowledge. So I think there was so much thought that was put into each number, and I think that was part of the beauty of having so many opinions as well along the way. It was kind of like Alexa and Vienna would, you know, they'd make outlines for numbers, they'd run the outlines by my aunt, and then she would kind of give her thoughts and her feedback. It wasn't like, okay, we just dropped choreography somewhere and then tried to just run with it. We just really tried to be involved in every step of the process and just make sure there was a flow, and there was, but then at the same time, each number was unique. Like, I think that's one thing to me that really stands out is there's not a number I get bored watching, and there's not a number I'm like, I don't mind skipping this one. Like, they all bring something completely unique and completely special.
We haven't talked about it all that much, but the costumes are just off the chart amazing. And in terms of making each of the dances more unique, each of them, like, what you're seeing on the stage at any given moment is so different from what you're seeing at any other time, because everybody is dressed like $1 million in something that's like the Empire. I think it's the Empire where you have everybody in these kind of like Victorian era dresses and that type of thing. And then there's another one where they're in the red coats like they're British soldiers. Is that the same?
It's the same number.
Different parts of the same dance. But yeah, you see the girls going around with their parasols and the men in suits and all of that type of thing. It's just phenomenal. And then you have one with ribbons as well. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I think the great thing about the storyline is that it really lends itself to that kind of variety. So then it's not just Irish dance. There's like, I looked up a lot of ribbon dancing, and so we have streamers in one number. They're kind of depicting waves, but they also come back throughout the show depicting different things.
I don't think the audience will be like, oh, it's just, this sounds similar to this song. Every single song is different and combined with a variety of dances and the variety of costumes. Like, I do think, like, it's already been said, but they'll love every number and you won't get bored of anything. So
Brian Byrne, he is a film score composer, and so I think a lot of people I know, they really like movie soundtracks. So it kind of appeals to both audiences, people that love the traditional Irish sound and then also film scores, because there's really that sweeping orchestration sound in a lot of his compositions. And so I don't think you cannot be moved when you're listening to his pieces, at least in some form, because they really are big and they can be pretty powerful and emotional, I think, too, especially when you see kids dancing to them.
I remember early on we had a conversation about just trying to find music that was really inspiring in terms of wanting to produce cool choreography and just that music that dancers really wanted to dance to. And lo and behold, this definitely fits the bill.
And everything sprung from the music. We got that. We got it. You know, we got it in synthesized form pretty early on.
Right.
And then from there, it just, everything happened.
I mean, we gave Brian Burns the outline. We told him the story we wanted to tell, and then he wrote music to fit the story.
Yeah.
This is really extraordinary from the standpoint of, you mentioned kids all the way to as young as 4 years old, but the oldest of them are basically the ones who are, I mean, we've got two that are dancing, sitting at the table here, that are in college. So you're not talking about folks with a long career in Irish dancing. This is essentially a bunch of high school and below, at college age at the top end.
And they're still in school.
and they're still in school. How has that been working to, you know, hours, what they've done, really hours a day of practicing once school got out? It's a lot of demands on some kids. How are they doing?
Yeah, I think it's been awesome. Now that we've started having rehearsals every single day and everything's choreographed, I feel like it's finally able to start sticking in their minds, because for a while there it was hard for them to remember, just because we're trying to learn.
I have no idea how they remember.
It's crazy. It really is crazy. But when you're trying to teach kids new choreographies, and sometimes you might not even touch a choreography for like 2 or 3 weeks, and then all of a sudden it's like, all right, let's run this number, and you see their minds like go blank, and they're just trying, the look of panic, honestly. So just now I feel like they're actually able to finally start remembering this. But when you look at the amount of dancing in this show, it's crazy just how much, you know, it's a lot to remember.
It's a lot.
And you look at Riverdance, Heartbeat of Home, Lord of the Dance, like they've all got different styles of dance incorporated in. It's not just Irish dance, but like we said earlier, besides Hannah, everything is Irish dance. So it's just, and
it's all them.
Yeah, it's all them. So
same kids on the stage over and over and over.
So they literally, they dance, they get off the stage, and they have to change within a minute or two and then get back on and remember what the next one is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. These kids are working their tails off.
They are.
Yeah. Really, really hard.
And they're just a really, that's one of the things that's really special too, is Vienna actually tells me quite often, she just says, I just love working with these kids. We're just so close. Mm-hmm. We just have a lot of fun and we laugh. And yes, there are times when it's stressful, but there are a lot of times when, you know, she's telling me like, oh, we had the best laugh, this happened. And she loves even talking to them at services because they're just close.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping to bring the dancers in maybe in next week or in a show sometime soon. So if they have a different story, we'll get to the bottom of it. So let's just finish by giving each of the opportunity to say what your favorite part of the show is. We'll start with you, Paris.
All right. Well, favorites are hard for me with this show because I feel like it changes depending on what's improving and what we're working on at that moment. So it's really hard to narrow it down. I think right now, and probably because we've spent a lot of time on this number recently, but Pioneers really does just stick out to me because I feel like it's going to be the most relatable piece for the audience. I think people are going to be like tapping their toes, like wanting to jump on stage with the kids because it is just so natural, and it's a hoedown. You want to get up there. Yeah. They're just running around. I think, especially for our kids, it's the easiest one for them to just have fun and relax because the other ones are probably more complicated in terms of footwork. So we are working with the kids on the showmanship, and we're going to be hitting that harder. But with Pioneers, it's way less work to get them there because you can just tell that they're enjoying it. So it just kind of comes out of them naturally. So yeah, I'm excited about that one. And I think the audience will really want to be involved, especially during that number.
Yeah. How about you, Alexa?
My favorite one, I think, is Conflict. It's just really intense and chaotic music. I think I've listened to that one like once a day since we got the final version, just because it's just so interesting. And you hear more every single time you listen to it. Jude's been the lead choreographer for that one, and he just undertook a lot with that. So it's been amazing to see it come together. Because there's 4 soloists, and then there's like 16 people that are kind of going in all these different formations, sometimes moving super fast and getting to spots. And then basically reacting to the soloists as they go. So that's been a lot of work that the kids aren't really used to, but we've been working for hours and hours on it in the past couple weeks, especially since Jude was able to come over from England. And it's been amazing because all the dancers, you can tell, think it's cool. So they're all pushing as hard as they can. Because even whenever those guys are dancing, like, we're all trying to see what they're doing. And then we try to react to it at the right time just so it's more impactful.
Yeah.
But I think that one's going to be really exciting for the audience.
That is a super, super dramatic number. How about you, Amy?
Well, I'm kind of like Paris. I have different favorites at different times. But I think just in general, I really like seeing the guys. Like, it's partly the music, but they step up to it and they're just dancing more masculine than I've ever seen them dance. And
they look
dancing
studly.
With, they do. Yeah. They look, they're confident. They look strong and masculine. And and it just is like, wow. It's just really impressive. And I love them in Gale. I love them in Conflict. Yeah. And then when they come out in Utopia with these amazing costumes, I couldn't help but, you know, wow. In the audience, we're just all screaming because they just look just so studly.
Vienna.
I mean, there's not one number in this show where I get bored, but I would think that probably the best one, at least in like just formations and then also just intensity along with Conflict, is Gale, which my mom mentioned, but just. I love it because it's so, like, there's so many emotions in this one dance. It's kind of talking, like, it's just troubling, like, and it's dark on the stage with, like, flashing lights and everything. So it's just very, like, I would say that it kind of puts the audience, like, on edge. Like, what's going to happen? Like, something's coming, but you don't really know what's going to happen. And
the music is super cool.
It's super cool. Lots of drums, lots of, like, just a really good beat in the music. And then a really awesome guy's part in the beginning, and then we've got a mixture of soft shoe and contemporary as well, and then like just a dramatic hard shoe ending. So I love seeing that, and you know, we were working on that this morning, and just seeing like the kids look stronger, and you know, their arms are getting all like nice and tense and everything, like everything is just finally coming together, and it's just really cool because you can see them, like their love for it growing too.
Yeah.
And especially they're definitely excited, and I think whenever you know they get that reaction like, wow, that was awesome, it just makes them even more pumped to do it better the next time. So I would say that Gale is probably one of my favorites.
That was an interview with the crew of Celtic Throne, recorded this past June. We're about to stage two performances in Edmond, Oklahoma, tomorrow night, Thursday, October 15th at 7:30 p.m., and this Sunday, October 18th at 2 in the afternoon, both at Armstrong Auditorium on our headquarters campus. Visit CelticThrone.com for more information.
This is the voice of the Trumpet News Magazine. You're listening to Trumpet Hour.
The shining stars of Celtic Throne are the dancers. The show has over 30 of them, and what is truly remarkable is they're almost all teenagers. The oldest just graduated college. There are a few who are in college. Most of them are in high school or grade school, all the way down to 4 or 5 years old. Here's an interview we did with a handful of these dancers. And I think this is a record number of guests on a Trumpet Hour. I've never had 8-9 people in this studio all at once. We have Hannah and Zoe and Jude and Leah and Erica and Tara and Aaron and Noah and Ava. Hello, everyone. Good to have you here. Hello.
Hello.
All right. So we're getting down to just the last few days here. How are you guys feeling about how it's coming together at this point?
I feel like it's been very exciting the last couple of weeks, but it's also getting fairly intense. I can definitely feel the pressure. I'm not a choreographer, but just as a dancer, the pressure is definitely getting heavier, but it's also just super exciting realizing that it's actually going to happen. So it's exciting.
So tell me about this. You've been hearing a lot lately about how you need to work harder than you have ever worked in your lives, right? I think I've heard, I've only been at some of the rehearsals, and I've heard that probably 3 or 4 times in the last couple of weeks. Tell us what kind of work is involved in making a show of this caliber.
I think when they first said we needed to work harder than we ever have in our life, I kind of in my mind thought of physically dancing as hard as we could that we ever have. But when they said to run through it in our mind with the music and kind of envision ourselves doing the steps by ourselves, it made me realize that it's mentally too, that we need to work harder than we ever have in our life. And that's a whole nother aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's easy to only think about working hard in class, but there's also lots to do outside of class. I think lots of like strength workouts, flexibility, working out core and that type of stuff just to make your dancing as good as possible. There's not enough time in class to work on all of that, so we have to do a lot of work on our own time as well.
Yeah, now I was talking to Ava. you said, Ava, that you felt like the work that you're putting into Celtic Throne is actually helping you to learn how to work harder in other areas too. Tell us about that.
I do piano and like lots of other things, and at first I was still working hard, but it wasn't like the hardest I could. And then whenever we started doing this and they said to work a lot harder, then everything, I just started working like a lot harder.
That's great. So you actually feel like you're finding a new gear of hard work in your life because of this show. First of all, just to get an idea of how intense and detailed this is, I mean you guys are trying to achieve perfection in everything that you're doing here. I wanted to ask Jude to just give us a sample. Every now and then I'll hear you guys are explaining the step that you're going to be doing, and you'll be describing it to everyone, and you're going, you're saying it like it's like a foreign language. It goes so fast. I want to give a little bit of a sample of this.
Okay, I'm going to have to turn on my British Irish dance teacher gear.
That's right. Yeah. That was where I first heard it. It was in oh, yeah, the John Kerry documentary.
It's a lot bigger over there. He says all the steps when you're doing them. We don't do it as much here, but there's a step I could do. Something from our origins. Let's see. Drum, 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 stamp out and stamp, stamp, drum, 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 stamp, diddle, diddle, toe, stamp, back triple and toe, hop toe, back triple and toe, antip, down toe, back triple, hop back.
Nice.
You have to do it with your hands at the same time.
That's
otherwise
right.
You
yeah,
can't.
There's always the hand yeah, gestures.
There's always hand gestures.
Yeah. The simulating the feet. So you choreographed one of the numbers. Was it just one?
It was two.
Conflict and
Resurgence. Resurgence isn't quite finished yet.
That's very interesting.
Well, so it was finished, and then our director had a really cool idea, threw me a massive curveball. He's like, yeah, let's do it again this way. And I was like, okay.
Okay, so conflict is really one of the big dramatic set pieces. Resurgence is a little, because it's not attached to a particular piece of music. Tell
it's
us about just
yeah,
the process that you went through in choreographing Conflict. How much was involved in that?
I never choreographed a group figure before. I've done a lot of hard shoe. I can choreograph solos pretty well. That's easier for me to do. Choreographing,
which makes sense because
right,
Conflict has what? How many people are on the stage?
20 people.
Yeah.
16 in soft shoe, 4 in hard shoe.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen a number quite like this one in another
the
show.
Combination.
It's very rare that you'll see a combination of hard shoe soloists with soft shoe dancers backing them up. So that was kind of a stab in the dark there. I thought it might work. I think it took quite a few tries. A lot of choreography is just trial and error. You give stuff to kids, it might look good, it might not, and then you change what looks bad and you keep what looks good.
Yeah.
So probably what you're seeing is a second, third, or fourth draft of what I originally came up with, which was absolute garbage.
You have this thing that you have doing where you have a central figure who's making movements, and then you have the entire rest of the people around him that are sort of reacting and amplifying what he's doing. That's just super cool. That took a lot of trial and error, I'm guessing.
Yeah, a lot of trial and error, and a lot of not necessarily going to the studio and trying things myself, but just thinking about, I'd have ideas during the day. What if I did this with his arm and then these mm-hmm. people react? It was kind of like never really like totally out of the back burner. I don't know. It was never something that I wasn't really working on, if you know what I mean.
It was always on your mind on some level.
Obviously I would have to focus on other things, but it was always, I knew it was a project that needed to get done, and I just kind of chipped away at it. Probably took 3 or 4 months.
Yeah. So Hannah Worrell, she's one of these kids is doing her own thing. The only non-Irish dancer in the group, and you have a really unique role in this production. Maybe you can tell us about it.
Absolutely. It's definitely interesting. When I was first approached about it, I didn't know hardly anything about the show. I just knew I was in this one part, and it was a minute piece, so that's like eight counts. So I just knew I had to fill that space. And so it was really interesting for me, like in this process, not really understanding the full show until I actually went to the first dress rehearsal and I got to see how my piece fit in. So I'm pretty much just representing the emotional aspect. I feel like the style of dance I'm doing, which is lyrical, is very good at conveying emotion through your movements and your body,
yep.
Which, I mean, I don't know, I'm not an expert in Irish dance, but it's probably harder for that to be seen.
Right.
So, yeah, it was definitely interesting, and it's a difficult process to get emotion in your body, but that's basically what I'm doing is presenting emotion.
So. But you have a long background in ballet, and you're very accustomed to controlling your body as far as that goes, a classical ballet education. How much does that transfer over into what you're doing?
Yes, it's actually definitely helpful. When I first started dancing, when I was 12 or 13, I actually did start in lyrical, and that's how I got my start doing ballet. And then I did switch over to doing ballet until last year when I came to college, and I stopped for a year. But it's definitely helpful. I feel like it gave me a lot of just knowledge of my body and how I can use it. Using my core, my arms, everything. Like, there's never an unintentional moment, which is super helpful because it just helps me then when I'm doing the choreography and I have this idea to know what looks good on stage with my body versus what someone else could do. So it's really helpful to know how to control it and how to use it to, you know, the best you possibly can.
Yeah. So what do you guys think of the music for this show?
I think the music's really cool and how it can tie into all, like, the storyline and everything.
I really admire how Brian Byrne weaves the themes into his music.
What is your favorite part of the show?
For me personally, it's Gale in conflict.
Yes. So what is it about? These are the two, like, dark ones.
Intense and dark and flashing lights.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
It just Gale is epic.
Epic.
Yeah. That's yeah.
The music's really
there is
cool.
Something about the music though that it adds a lot. You'd expect to come to an Irish dance show and hear like traditional Irish music, and it is. I mean, you have the Irish tunes, but it's very cinematic. You know, maybe listening to Heartbeat of Home, it's really not even like that. It's just imagine like a movie soundtrack with more Irish tunes, kind of put on top of it. But then a lot of it's not really even Irish. We've got strings, like Brian Byrne just did an incredible job, including the whole orchestra, obviously including the traditional Irish instruments, Gillian pipe, fiddle, and other things, flute and stuff. But it's really a whole orchestra combined with like a lot of synthetic sound effects and other things to make a really, really interesting sounding mix that I don't think our audience was probably will have ever heard before.
What is it? None of you have ever been involved in anything on a scale of what you're working on now. Tell me about some of the lessons that you've learned from being a part of something where you really are being pushed to exceed anything you've ever done before. What are some lessons you've learned?
I've just been thinking a lot about all of the young people out in the field that may not have an opportunity such as this one, and it is such a huge opportunity, and I know Mr. McDonald has been encouraging us to make the most of it, and I know that all of us are striving to do the best we can, but I've just been thinking about all of those in the field and friends that I know of who maybe they're going through difficult things right now, or they can't go out and do things they normally would have. So I just have been trying to push myself as hard as I can for them and just really take the opportunity and run with it as far as I can go. So
yeah, I mean, it really is an amazing example to serve because, I mean, it is extremely hard and you have to put in the effort. And like Zoe said, you can't just do the practices. Like, you have to be doing it at home. And Mr. McDonald really encouraged us to, like, be listening to the music. And we really have to have this, like, throughout our minds, like, pretty much every day. And it is just really rewarding when people come up to us and just say how much hard work we've put in, even though, like, we may not feel like we're doing that good. But it just is encouraging. And then it helps us to practice and work harder.
I think for me, one major thing I've tried to do is just be patient. I think the teachers are doing their best to be patient with us. We mess up a lot, so I'm sure it's hard for them, but I try to be patient with the teachers as well because they've got so much on their plate. They're choreographing a lot of it, and then they're also dancing in it as well and just trying to take care of so many details.
Whenever we first started doing it, I wasn't in a ton of stuff, and so then I told my mom about it, and she said that if I just worked harder, I might be able to be in more things. So I just started working, like, extra hard, and then they started putting me in a lot more things.
Very cool. So you work hard, and good things happen. That's a good lesson for all of life.
I can just really tell that a lot of people are praying for us, and obviously we're praying that God would protect us from injury. But there was a woman that came up to me recently and was like, "I've been praying for your joints and stuff." And I was like, "Oh, well, thank you." But and honestly, I can tell. I mean, you know, the workload that I've had, it's different from, you know, training for Worlds or something where it would be really intense for maybe 2.5 hours a day, three if you count workouts and stuff in addition to practices. This is more like it's less intense, but it's pretty much all day, which yeah. I would think is worse for your joints because they don't get as much rest. But the soreness level has been very moderate for me, and I think for a lot of others as well, that we just haven't heard as many complaints about, you know, shin splints and other things as I was expecting. And I honestly think it is so many people are praying for our health and even our minds and everything, and we can really tell that. So we just want to thank everyone for praying for us, and then hopefully you can keep it up the next 2 weeks so that we can have a really good show.
That was an interview recorded this past June with several of the dancers of Celtic Throne. We're about to stage two performances of this spectacular Irish dance production in Edmond, Oklahoma. Tomorrow night, Thursday, October 15th at 7:30 p.m. and this Sunday, October 18th at 2 in the afternoon, both at Armstrong Auditorium. For more information, visit CelticThrone.com.
This is Trumpet Hour with Joel Hilliker.
Celtic Throne would be nothing without the spectacular music of the show. This was composed especially for us by Brian Byrne. Here's the conversation I had with him back in June. So I have to start by saying I have three children in the dance troupe, and uh-huh. and I've been drafted to play Bahran and mandolin in the band for the performances. I've been listening to this music a lot, and it is terrific. I think people are really going to love it. So thank you very much for contributing that.
My pleasure.
So you do a big variety of projects, and you compose in a lot of different genres, but you're from Ireland. Would you say Irish music, Irish folk, Irish dance is kind of your native musical language?
I think so. I mean, I grew up around a lot of traditional Irish musicians, and Ireland is such a small country that you don't have to go far before you bump into somebody with a fiddle or a bowron or an accordion.
Yeah.
I grew up in a very musical family. We weren't a traditional Irish family. We studied classical music, and I played in a band with my father, a wedding band when I was a kid, and I always played by ear. But really, it was when I went to college in Scotland that I had a baptism of fire with Irish music. I learned more about Irish music living in Scotland in the UK than I did in Ireland. Just so happened the people that I was around. And to make ends meet during college, I would play harpsichord in a classical trio in a museum one night. Hmm. And then the next night I might play jazz in a jazz club. And then another night I'd be drafted to play with folk groups and traditional groups. And I just was always surrounded and drawn toward my native kind of music. And my sister-in-law is a choreographer. She choreographed the original girl's part on Riverdance. So I would do... She would draft me to do some, to write some music for shows and bits of things. So over the last 20 years or so, I've ended up writing a lot of Irish traditional music, and which led to my, you know, working on Harpy to Home, which was from the producers of Riverdance. So initially I wasn't a traditional Irish musician, but I think it's in our DNA. And I think if you hang around those people long enough by osmosis, you can soak that stuff up.
Now, when you we approached you toward the end of last year, you had a gap in your schedule to be able to do this project. You came and visited Armstrong Auditorium, and we were talking at that point about how when you have non-Irish composers who try to write Irish music, that there's something that doesn't necessarily feel quite authentic about it. Maybe you could talk about that. What is it that makes Irish music authentic, and what would you say makes it unique?
Well, I think first and foremost, it's the form and the structure. The Irish music are they're dance tunes, so they're essentially jigs, which is a 6/8 dance that was all across Europe, very very old. It's a 6/8 thing, and it's usually 8 bars of an A section, 8 bars of a B section, and then you'll have reels, which are in 4/4 time, very common, or you'll have slip jigs. So there's a set of it's all dance music, and first of all, you need to know the forms of each dance. It's the same as classical music. If you learn Bach, right, for instance, he wrote jigs, and he wrote, you know, a lot of dance music, because that's what people did back then. They didn't really have stereos. They had musicians in the corner that were hired playing for dances. And the same in Irish music, unless you understand the basic principle, the form of the dance, there's no way you can write for Irish dancers or musicians. And really, I there was a book that I got when I was a kid. It was O'Neill's Tunes. This musician in Ireland a couple of hundred years ago, he wrote down a lot of the Irish tunes that were passed down through. And I remember when I was at college, I think I played through every one of them just to learn what this music is and to learn the form of it. And so really, you have to start off with the form, and then you need to know the melodic structure. It's a very pleasing sound. It's very, I won't go too detailed, but it's very diatonic and easy on the ear, because the instruments were non-chromatic instruments way back then. So they're pretty simple scales.
Yeah.
So really, I think you have to do your 1,000 hours of, or your 10,000 hours of either listening or playing or being involved in that music. And then you take the task at hand, which is we need a piece that's a reel, we need a piece that's a jig, and then I sit down, I'll write down without any harmony or chords or anything, I'll write the tune out, and it's all about the melody. And if the melody's not strong, then it's not good Irish music, because one of the strongest things about Irish music or Celtic music is the melodies. And if you slow down any of these dances, a fast reel or a fast jig, if you slow it down really, really slow, you'll get the most awesome ballad you've ever heard. It's a trick I tell people, that if you want to write a really soulful Irish song, just go to the book of tunes and slow down any of those tunes, and you'll find the most beautiful soulful tunes. So really, you have to live that music for a good while.
Yeah, that's very cool. So we really were thrilled that you agreed to do the Celtic Throne soundtrack. What made you decide this was a project that you wanted to undertake?
Well, I have a house in Oklahoma. My wife is from Oklahoma. My kids go to school in Oklahoma. I'm a film composer, so with the luxury of technology, I can write anywhere in the world. I spent almost 20 years in Los Angeles, and my agents never knew where I lived, because I did everything over email, over phone, and now we can do it with Zoom and Skype. So we bought a house here in Oklahoma, and I love it. I'm building a studio at the back of the house as we speak, and I hope to employ local musicians. And and so when Paris Turgeon called me up and said, we want to do an Irish dance show in Oklahoma, first of all, I was gobsmacked that there's even an Irish dance troupe in Oklahoma City. So that had me kind of intrigued.
Yeah.
And then she told me she had seen Heartbeat at Home in London and that they were big fans. And then one of the choreographers that you guys work with was in Riverdance. And so there was this crazy connection that seemed too good to overlook. And all of the work that I'm doing here seems to be coming out of Los Angeles or coming out of the UK or Ireland. So I thought it'd be interesting to try and do some work here in Oklahoma. And I thought it'd be a wonderful opportunity. And I came to see the Armstrong Auditorium, and I was just blown away by the concert hall and how nice you guys all were, and it just fit in between my schedule. I was after finishing a movie, and it just was the perfect time to write it. So it all seemed to work out, and the collaboration was one of the easiest things I've ever done. Just you guys gave me the brief, and I went to town, and I did corrections and notes back and forth, which I love doing. And it was just a lovely experience.
Well, I would be interested in more information about that. Just that you wrote 9 pieces for the show. Initially, it was intended to maybe be the introduction and the finale, and it ended up being pretty much the whole show. Maybe you could just tell us a little bit about what the directors were looking for, the specific input that they gave you, and then how that process unfolded with the back and forth.
Well, as a film composer, sometimes we are working to a brief all the time. You have a director or a producer that says, I need X, Y, and Z, or else you look at the picture and it needs to be 2 minutes, 6 seconds, whatever. So
right.
I think I said to Paris that when I met her, I can either go away and do this myself, but I think you guys are designing a dance show. Let me know what you want in great detail, mm-hmm. put it all on paper, and I'll take it from there. So, you know, she said she wanted a big opening and it needed to be a reel and it needed to be this amount of time. And really the notes or the brief I got was really detailed and to the point from your director and from Paris. And I just really went away and I spent a good few weeks just writing the 2 pieces. And I think they seemed to work. Paris seemed to like them. Mm-hmm. And then I think if you're going to do a whole show, sometimes if you have a whole lot of composers, you're missing a thread through, and I think it seemed to make more sense if I were to write most of the pieces, because then I could steal the themes from myself. So in other words, uh-huh. I could write a slow theme, a farewell theme, and then at some stage I could maybe use that as a counter melody in another fast tune. You know, if you're writing a symphony, you use motifs,
yeah,
and themes, and you build on it. So rather than just a hodgepodge of 9-10 random tunes, it's almost like a symphonic Celtic work where each thing has a reason and they're sonically linked. It's the same traditional Irish musicians playing on each track, and I just thought it would be from a coherent point of view, which is what I did with Harpy to Home. And when you work on shows, it's kind of easier if you have one thread going through. So that was a joy to do that.
That is marvelous. Could you give us a little insight into just how you work? You're composing, I'm assuming, on like a synthesized setup. You're putting ideas into a notation program or some kind of a sequencer and working from there?
Yeah. What I do, first of all, is I write out the melody specifically for, well, really for anything. If it's for a movie, I will sit at the piano and try and come up with a theme. And if it's a memorable theme, then I'll transfer it into my computer. Mm. I'll write it out in Sibelius first. So it's kind of old school. Even though I'm using the computer, I write out so I can see the form. I can see that it's 16 bars, and then at 17 bar, I'll write in, I'm going to do this change here. So rather than just putting my hands on a keyboard and throwing whatever comes out first, that tends to lead to a kind of mediocre level of composition. I think that the initial ideas are good. You improvise the initial ideas, but then I think what works best for me is if I write it, compose it, arrange it the way that arrangers and orchestrators do. That way I have the map, and then from Sibelius I'll open up Logic, and I have a ton of sample libraries from Logic, and I'll mock up everything. Logic is a program that a sequencer, a DAW, that film composers use, and it's very convenient. It means that, so I do everything in MIDI samples first, no audio. And the reason is choreographers always want changes, and they always, can you change the tempo here?
Yep.
Can you cut out 26 and a half bars? If you do that with audio, it gets a little tough, but at least with MIDI, you can control to change the tempos. And then once we're set and we're agreed that this is the speed and the feel and the tempo, then I will either go to a studio where I have a symphony orchestra, or I will have musicians, or in this case, because COVID-19 kind of kicked in, we did a lot of the traditional Irish musicians online virtually, and it worked out great. I mean, obviously it's nicer to be in the room with them, but with the current climate, that's the way we went. So it's a very strategic, you know, but first of all, I do improvise the themes. I do try and come up, and then I'll write them out, realize them in Logic, send it off, mix it, and then I'll go to Pro Tools and then do final delivery on Pro Tools.
Mm. So I have to say, there are some dynamite performances on here. You've used some top drawer musicians from all over the place who recorded for this project. And you're doing basically all of this remotely. I'm wondering how much the coronavirus lockdown doesn't even affect your ability to do a project like this when you're able to just say, here's the music, here's the track to play to, and then you've got musicians remotely recording these things for you.
Exactly. And I learned that from, I studied film composition in London, in the Royal College of Music in London, opposite the Albert Hall. When I went there, I was too broke to go to a concert in the Albert Hall, but I had, my teacher was Joseph Horowitz. He was this old European guy, still alive, he's in his 90s. And the biggest thing I learned from him with composition was you need to write your music. So if you are on your way to the recording session and you get hit by a bus, this kind of weird thing, but if you get hit by a bus and somebody picks up your music and they bring it to the soundstage, that music will sound the same on the soundstage without you, pretty much as if you were there. So when I say I write in Sibelius and I write everything detailed, that's where it's like building a house or designing a house. If the map is right and the architecture, if it's all in the plans, then it's easy from there. And what I do then is I just send an MP3, I send the details, and I send the sheet music. And now everyone, with these lockdowns, more and more people are getting microphones and systems at home.
Yeah,
and it just worked like a dream. So I was very lucky. And yes, luckily, I'll touch wood, we're not too affected by COVID-19 with that process. Obviously, for live concerts, I've had a lot of that stuff canceled, but it's okay. Yeah. I'm very busy and I've movies. And so I'm one of the lucky ones, I think.
That was an interview recorded this past June with the composer of the music for Celtic Throne, Brian Byrne. We're about to stage two performances of this spectacular Irish dance production in Edmond, Oklahoma, tomorrow night, Thursday, October 15th at 7:30 p.m., and this Sunday, October 18th at 2 in the afternoon, both at Armstrong Auditorium. For more information, visit CelticThrone.com. I'm Joel Hilliker, and that'll do it for today's Trumpet Hour. You can send me any thoughts on today's program to letters@thetrumpet.com. Thanks to Nick Irwin and Dwight Falk for engineering and production. I'll leave you with this thought from Carl Sagan. If you wish to make an apple pie truly from scratch, you must first invent the universe. Thank you for joining us on Trumpet Hour. Until next time, keep watching your world.
You've been listening to Trumpet Hour on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, and online at kpcg.fm. Understand your world.